B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
James Stewart flying the ship solo as Mike Riley is away for his birthday weekend. Happy birthday, Mike. A few news items and then to your questions. First of all, the SummerSlam Zoom call details will be coming this week, so pay attention to social media for that and for those details to enter to join Mike Riley and myself and hopefully others for a SummerSlam Zoom call. At this time, WWE is looking at Atlantic City for SummerSlam. Maybe Trump Plaza is still available, or is that place in bankruptcy? Not sure. Overall, there's going to be a hot end of the summer coming with TakeOver and SummerSlam and Backlash and AEW's All Out events. So thank you for the content. The big story for me this week is Eric Bischoff made his return to Pro Wrestling TV this week. He was a moderator for a segment between Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy. I thought Bischoff was good in the spot and came across well. I'll be interested to see if it's just a one-off for Eric or if he signed a longer-term contract to work with AEW. I'm sure he'll detail his experience in much greater detail on this week's 83 Weeks podcast. I'm not sure where Eric fits in AEW. As it is, AEW seems packed with too many wrestlers for their 3 hours of wrestling per week. 2 hours on TNT and then the hour on YouTube, which I don't know how many people really like invest in that show. Maybe a lot more than I do than I see, but it seems like it's the 2 hours on TNT that everybody invests in. Speaking of Wednesday night in AEW, 22 men wrestled, 12 in one match, two women wrestled, and it lasts about 90 seconds. But the world of AEW seems, or at least the world of social media seems, upset at AEW and their women's movement. So to be part of this women's movement, you have to pay $50 to talk about it with Brandi Rhodes. And if you don't, you're the problem, at least according to Brandi Rhodes on Twitter. So the background is Brandi Rhodes and AEW launched a women's wrestling fan membership service called the AEW Heels. It's a $49 annual subscription. It's a $49 annual subscription price for women fans to have virtual meet and greets, video conferences, talent Q&As, customized merchandise, and special event promotions and theme parties. But it's only available for women. So when Brandi saw the criticism on Twitter, she reacted pretty poorly. And Brandi dumped it on the fans for not being in line with her thinking. And ultimately, Brandi Rhodes deleted her Twitter account. So add Brandi Rhodes to the list of AEW talent that seem so overly sensitive about Twitter feedback. I do think that AEW was a good show this week, and the ratings, which the AEW roster will tell us all about, were really good. I work in the media business, so I pay attention to ratings numbers around TV, radio, and digital. But I work in the media, so I'm not really sure that the guy driving around in his truck driving up Route 1 in Saugus cares about the media world. There's a theory, though, that ratings are similar to polling numbers. If you continue to tell people something or someone is popular, the audience will begin to believe it and agree with it. Sharing polling and ratings numbers are really about getting everyone in line with similar thinking or making someone question themselves as to why they aren't going along with the popular notion. AEW being so open with their ratings also speaks to their advertisers, which we as fans, we don't care about that. I saw somewhere, and it might have been in my text messages, it might have been on social media, that AEW beat Raw this week in the 18 to 34 persons demo, which is something that AEW would want to sing to the high hills about publicly because that's a big win for them. That is a win over Monday Night Raw, even if it's just in a smaller, isolated demographic. But those demographics are important too, thus because it's the future of where our audience might go. So you're going to see AEW sing more about this, I think. And as I said, the person, Joe Blow in his truck driving up Route 1 in Saugus or driving on the Pike in Massachusetts, I don't know that they necessarily care. But again, it might be a conditioning thing. I was happy to get some questions this week so we could do an Ask Jace Do Anything segment. Thanks to those who sent in questions, video, digital files, audio files. I wanted to do it that way because I think the idea of me just reading questions to myself for an hour can be a little boring. So I appreciate everybody who participated participating. So the backstory is I had four names who I wanted to do a podcast with this week and do kind of a similar format as Mike and I do. One name was told no, not to me, wanted to do it, but was told no by their bosses. Two didn't respond to my request, which is disappointing. And the fourth I thought I had, but the timing of it didn't work out. So if a random interview kind of pops up in the future, it might have been one of those four names that I reached out to for this week's episode. So stay tuned for that. And it might not have been. It might be somebody who I just wanted to do a podcast with. So we'll see. Our first question this week comes from Jason.
The Rock just bought out the XFL in bankruptcy. Hypothetically, could The Rock use his Hollywood connections to raise the money to buy out Vince?
Jason, I think The Rock could get the money to buy out Vince, but I don't think The Rock wants to, and I don't think Hollywood wants to buy the WWE. And I'm not really sure that Vince wants to sell the WWE. I remember back in March hearing that Vince was looking at selling rights to his content, but that's different from selling off the company. Someone might have even told me that Vince was putting out feelers to sell the WWE off to Disney because wrestling is dying. But again, I still don't see Vince, who built this family business into what it is today, giving up control of his company. So yes, The Rock could buy out Vince, but I don't think that either party is looking to buy or sell. Here's a question from Jared.
In 2001, when the WWF bought WCW, all the guys that decided to stay home and collect paychecks, what if they all came over in the invasion angle? How does that change history? Instead of having one of the biggest what-ifs and biggest disappointments that was the invasion flop, all of a sudden you have top tier from WCW against probably the most stacked roster in WWF history. I think that would have been phenomenal. Just curious what you think.
So, Jared, I love rebooking. I could do 4 hours every week on rebooking everything. I think it would have been better, and I think it would have lasted longer. But I wonder how much longer. And do we still see Rock Hogan at WrestleMania 18? I think so. I feel like that match would have been the end of the WWF versus WCW story. That's just an opinion. I just think that Vince would get bored with the story, as he did once. And I think we have to remember that the first WCW-ECW pay-per-view, the Invasion, was Booker T, Bubba Dudley, Diamond Dallas Page, Devon Dudley, and Rhino. That was the alliance. And they beat Team WWF, which was Jericho, Kane, Kurt Angle, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and The Undertaker. Team WWF. I think the WCW team would have been a lot stronger. And we have to assume that there would be no ECW involved. So if we're assuming that there's no ECW involved, and WCW's team would be Hogan, Goldberg, Ric Flair, Sting, and Diamond Dallas Page, right? That's what we have to assume. Hogan is more of a WWF guy, but he wasn't a bad guy in WWF unless you're watching before 84, and him being a bad guy in WWF would be something that that audience, the hardcore WWF fan, wouldn't have seen. And Hogan being a bad guy and Vince producing him might be different, and maybe that's where they get away with him on Team WCW. Jericho is more of a WCW guy at the time, so we wouldn't have gotten the Steve Austin turn, even though Steve Austin might have been more of a WCW guy. But he wasn't, because Steve Austin got big in the WWF circles. But those are just guessing as to how they put teams together. But in the short term, let's look at what SummerSlam that year could have been. Austin Goldberg, Ric Flair Kurt Angle, Undertaker Sting, and The Rock versus DDP. All those matches look good on paper, but in the Vince McMahon WWF world, the WWF guys would have to be good guys, and the WCW guys have to be bad guys. But those four matches I just mentioned, the crowd wouldn't know what to do, because Vince would want the crowd to support all the WWF guys, and I just don't see that happening, depending on where the show is located and all these other little details. So Vince might have bailed earlier on the WCW invasion, but the outcome of Vince buying WCW should have been WCW on Monday and then the WWF on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever the other show that was going over broadcast network would have been. Because in Vince's mind, it would have been the WWF show has the potential to have more eyes on it than the WCW show. All right, a few questions here from Carl.
So do you think the WWE Underground will lead to Brock versus Bobby or possibly some UFC fighters joining? Maybe a new paint of coat for Kane. Maybe they'll bring in Travis Brown, Ronda's husband. Dan Cormier's always expressed interest. Plus, you also have the possibility of Cyborg maybe coming in. Connor.
So I love the idea of Raw Underground. Do something different. All those names you mentioned, Carl, I would be interested in. The key goal is Raw Underground needs to spin out at least one star. And it can't be Bart Gunn from the Brawl for All. Timothy Thatcher would do great in that setting. And I'm a biased Oney Larkin fan. Maybe his hard-hitting style would be better suited for that. But the idea that I would rather see Raw Underground and see Dolph Ziggler choke somebody out in 60 seconds than a four-minute job match or enhancement match or a squash match is something I'd be more interested in.
So MJF says he's the future of AEW. But once his contract's up, do you think he really stays? Or is he WrestleMania bound?
I don't see MJF going to the WWE right now. In AEW, he doesn't have to worry about somebody creating for him and writing for him. The creative process in AEW is just much more open than it is in WWE. And I've seen MJF do some of his best work around fans. He's just torn into them on promos. It's been really like a pleasure to see that work. MJF can't do that if he's under a Vince McMahon contract. How many tweets have WWE stars had to take down because they're playing villain on Twitter? AEW is going to pay MJF as long as they need to, and they might make him the world champion. We'll see. I still think they should hold off on that one.
When do you think we get to see the WWE bring in managers for the lady wrestlers? We see Vicky Guerrero in AEW. What about WWE?
Women managers. Vince doesn't seem to like managers for male wrestlers, so I can't see Vince signing off on wrestling managers for females either. If I'm going to have a female manager, though, for a female wrestler, it's Becky Lynch. She can manage whoever they believe or she believes is the next one. Becky managing Rhea Ripley in a revenge program against Charlotte, that interests me. Christian has a few questions here.
James, I have three questions for you. One, who do you think is part of the Retribution group for Raw?
I have no idea who the Retribution group is going to be, and I love it. My big hope is that this group is all new guys. It's new talent that can come in and make an impact, like the Shield did. That is my hope. I don't necessarily love that it's a Riot-based group, but it's Bruce Pritchard using real-life situations and moving it into pro wrestling. So I understand it. But let's see where it goes. Vince could hate the idea in 3 weeks, and it's gone and over.
Two, what do you think about Impact and New Japan's potential relationship?
If New Japan and Impact have a deal in place to work together, that's great. I know Ring of Honor people still think that they have a working relationship with New Japan, and AEW has talents who can work for New Japan internationally. I think Ring of Honor needs New Japan the most out of the three groups to get an exclusive deal, with the exception of Jericho and Moxley, who have it in their contract that they can work over there, but Ring of Honor wouldn't have to worry about that since it wouldn't be in the States. Ring of Honor is due to come back at any time doing empty arena matches. They've got good talent, but the Bucks and Cody use them, and since the MSG show, Ring of Honor has shown a dip in attendance. ROH has a big syndication, but no national TV deal. And those national TV deals are big deals. It's worth mentioning that New Japan did its best numbers in the U.S., working with Ring of Honor and then adding Jericho to its handful of matches. So the New Japan deal, if they get with Ring of Honor and they get a national TV deal, that's important. If it's with Impact, that's important too, because more people will go and watch Impact on Access TV. But with the pandemic world that we're living in, I'm not sure anybody's going to have an exclusivity type deal with New Japan in the States right now. Maybe they do satellite feeds of cross matches. It's time will tell, but I don't think anybody's going to get an exclusive deal right now.
3. Who should turn heel? Adam Page or Kenny Omega?
I don't want Page or Kenny Omega to turn heel. Page has all the talent in the world inside the ring. He has a great look, but he has limited promo skills. And the same might be true for Kenny Omega. That Jerry Lynn text still kind of offends me, but I understand where it's coming from. Both can overcome their promo limitations in the right situation. But here's what I go back to. What draws the most money in the U.S.? It's strong promos. You all know the names. I went through them last week. I love Bob Backlund as a wrestler, and he's a fabulous person in the interactions that I have had with him. But during his 6-year run as WWE champion, WWWF champion, Worldwide Wildlife Foundation champion, during his run as the WWWF champion and the WWF champion, who was main eventing most of those shows? Who was the special attraction matches? It was Billy Graham. It was Dusty Rhodes. It was Andre. I'll use the 1980 Shea Stadium show as an example. It's Backlund, the world champion, Pedro Morales, the intercontinental champion, fighting the Wild Samoans for the tag team titles. And they won the match in 2 straight falls. And they won the tag team titles, which they later gave up. It was the 5th match on the show. The show was 13 matches. That was match number 5. Andre beating Hogan was the semi-main event to Bruno Sammartino beating Larry Zbysko in a steel cage match. And Backlund wasn't a strong promo in that time. And maybe somebody like Sean Grandy will correct me if I'm wrong, because he loves Backlund and I love Backlund. But Backlund's strongest promo work came when he was in 1994, when he was being so good that it was so bad. So Backlund's promo skill set didn't draw like Bruno and Zbysko did, and that's clear, and Andre and Hogan the first go around, and Dusty and superstar Billy Graham. It was just a different style. But at the time, Bob Backlund was the most credible wrestler that the WWF had that didn't have a last name of Race or Funk. All right, Lauren has a question for us.
Hey, Jimmy. So my question to you, because of COVID, we haven't had live audiences in WWE for months and months. Who do you think on the roster has benefited from not having a live audience, and who has it hurt not having a live audience? Thanks.
Daniel Bryan was the most helped by this. AJ Styles was helped. It has helped All Elite Wrestling. The live audience has mostly hurt the WWE style of television. WWE produces TV and does matches in a very cookie-cutter way. Probably the wrestler it's hurt most is Baron Corbin. He's an old-school villain. He's an old-school wrestling bad guy who was taught a singular way to work a match, and he can't work that style right now because there's no fans to react to what he's doing. So that's an issue. And there are others who have just been brought up in this cookie-cutter WWE style of move, wait for the crowd to react, next move, look at the hard camera. They had to redo how they do television. And it's a different style than they've been trained to do. I think it helped The Undertaker greatly because he had his wonderful send-off match. And it forced WWE Creative to create the Boneyard match and to make more movies and things of that nature. Last question, and it relates to main events. So here's a main event player, Elliot from Boston.
couple years ago, Alpha and Omega and the Revival, when they were having great matches at TakeOver, Chad Gable had said that his wish is for tag team wrestling to one day headline WrestleMania. Now, we've seen women headline WrestleMania. We've seen big matches to end WrestleMania. Will tag team wrestling ever headline a major pay-per-view?
Technically, WrestleMania 1's main event was a tag team match, but your point is valid, and your question is certainly valid. Will a tag team story ever build to a WrestleMania main event? And I don't think so. The chance might have been during the Edge Christian Dudley's Hardy ladder match era. I don't see Vince McMahon and WWE investing time and effort into building up an Usos versus New Day main event tag team match for WrestleMania. It's just not what WWE does. Maybe WWE should have done that with the Shield versus Evolution. That's the closest probably the closest WWE will ever get is four major single stars who might be limited, but as tag team partners can put on a hell of a show. I think of Undertaker, Cena, AJ Styles, and The Fiend. If you put those four in the same match as tag teams, that might be what you end up getting. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Next week, I anticipate Mike Riley being back from his birthday, weekend, week, celebration, whatever. He needs to get off the grid. Next week, we will be previewing SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver, and I'm sure there'll be some weird wrestling news event that'll come up that'll grab our attention. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original programming available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.